Today's Daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Daf Ayin Zayin, and that means that it is, well, it might mean it's love, ki azah ki mavet ahava. It might mean ki az gvula amori, might mean that it's a very tough Daf. There's all kinds of implications, but we'll find out as we go along. So we learned yesterday that the idea of the compound fracture is very dependent on what is surrounding the rove of this compound fracture. Is it skin? Is it soft gidim? Is it muscle? But basically the idea was that we could actually cure it if at least we have a rove. Now the question is, how do we define not the size of that rove, but how do we define the status of the type of organic material, whether we're referring to muscle, referring to skin? What is the condition of that skin or muscle? So I want to know, first of all, mitlaket mahu. What if we do have rove, but there's been a lot of damage over here, and there are separate pieces? It's not as if we have one solid piece of rove, but between the various pieces that we add them together, we would have rove. But we don't have one piece covering it. What would be the din over there? How about if it's mitroseis? You've got muscle that's been actually spread out, so it was flattened by the impact. What about that? Does it count that now it's rove? Or what if it's mitmasmes mahu? What if it actually has started really decaying itself? It doesn't look like it's going to make it. And if that's the case, does it count? Well, what do you mean when you say mitmasmes? Well, Omer v'nei b'reved of Yehoshua, I'm talking about if a doctor, in this case a veterinarian, would be kodro. So if it would be curetted, and he would come and he would see this, and in order to allow it to heal, he would cure it the flesh, then obviously that is decayed. I mean, he doesn't want it there at all. Ibailu, I got another question. When we talk about it's got to cover the rove, suppose there's holes in it, not holes that are missing any material, just holes. So, I mean, we know until now we've made a big distinction between missing material and holes. Is that a problem if there are holes? Or can we call that a solid piece of skin? How about if it was niklaf? How about the muscle that would normally have been attached to this bone has now peeled away from the bone or the skin? It's peeled away. Does it need to be attached in order for it to be considered to be covering it? What about if it was nizdak? How about if it's split right through it? Is it still called the correct busser around it? How about if the area, assuming that you say that it doesn't have to be attached to the bone, does it still have to be there, though? How about if the bottom third of the skin had been removed and it's only got the upper section? Would that be enough, or does it need to be intact? Well, at least that I think I can answer you, Toshma. The Omar Ula, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, or Hareyu Kibasar. Remember we learned before that the skin is good enough, when I'm assuming that that means that all you have is the skin. Well, if all you have is the skin, then that means that all of the muscle underneath was completely destroyed, and you're left with nothing but skin. So, I mean, for sure, if you have the skin plus two-thirds of the busser, which is the muscle, I mean, of course it would be good. No? No. Maybe it's talking about an area on the hoof bone. Maybe that's the konamashka today. That's where the skin is firmly connected to its own bone. There is no muscle on the foot. There's just skin and bones. So you don't know that that's not what it's referring to. Omer Rav Ashi, when we were learning by Rav Papi, we wanted to know what would be the din if nikdar kimin tabat mahu. So over here, you do have an actual covering, which covers rove, but it's not connected to the rest of the skin and muscle. So basically, this guy was hit by an open pipe, you know, and it cut out a ring around the bone, fractured the bone, And now the bone is sticking out with the ring of muscle around it in that spot, but it's not part of the rest of the leg. Is that going to regrow, or is that we just ignore that? And if we don't have Rove without that, and then it's not going to be good. So what if it's like a ring around a fracture? And we brought a raya from a mimer that we heard from reviewed in the name of Rav. And Rav had said, I spoke both to doctors, professionals, and to Talmidei Chachamim, and I asked about a case where you have something like this. Is there a way to regenerate the connection between the muscle on one side of this ring and the rest of the leg? And they said, yes, there is what to do. If you irritate the basar with bone, don't use metal, use a bone from stump, a bone tool. And if you do that and you irritate it, it starts to bleed and regenerate. But do not use metal. If you end up using some type of metal, then you irritate it, and actually that causes it to pull back instead of growing. But I see from there that it is fixable, and therefore the whole idea over here, is it fixable or not? Yes, it is. Omer of Papa. Now, wait a minute. Let's make sure we understand. It is fixable and it is kosher, but only where kona garma dide. The bone is still holding tight to that piece. So, in other words, if you've got the flesh around it is attached very tightly, that means it has started to regenerate, because that's the first thing that happens, is a little bit of connective tissue starts to form, and that means that it's starting to heal. But if not, you can't rely on the fact that you might be able to connect the two. Okay, Zakhtar Commissioner. Hashocheteta Behemah Matzah Ashiliyah Nefesh Hayafah Tochlena. So first of all, there's a problem over here in the question of the terminology. The terminology today has a shiliyah as a placenta, and that is not the meaning here in the Gemara. In the Gemara, we're talking about actually the amniotic sac and not the shiliyah itself, not the placenta. Although there wouldn't be necessarily a fundamental difference in any of it, but what we're talking about over here is the fact that we're going to be matir the achila of the entire element that it doesn't. Remember, a placenta is a very specific organ that is actually the source of the passing over of both the oxygen and the nutrients from the mother's circulation of blood to the fetus, and that's quite a complex feat. Amniotic sac is basically just a couple of membranes in which the fetus is held, and there's amniotic fluid to suspend the fetus to prevent shock and damage in the event that there's a fall or something like that. Now, the truth is that neither of these items will possibly form without there actually having been a fetus. The thing is that the amniotic sac contains the fetus. So therefore, all of the discussion that we're going to have over here regarding the chashash that if the amniotic sac has actually been expelled, at what point do we have to assume that the fetus was expelled with it if we don't see a fetus? Because remember, the din is that isha ki tazriya v'yoldas is a din that tells us that even if the fetus was reduced through trauma or whatever else went wrong, was reduced to ke'in zri'ah. So basically, it's been reduced just to fluid, and there's nothing visible anymore of, at least without a microscope, there's nothing visible that we would identify as a fetus. Nonetheless, the fact that we have an amniotic sac means that if that sac was expelled, then somewhere or another, in the course of that expelling, the fetus was also expelled, or what's left of the fetus was also expelled. Now, the reason that that's important is because, as we're going to see, the Torah is matir, eating anything that was inside of the animal that was part of the formation of the fetus, and that's the behemah ba behemah that we learned. And we're going to bring a pasuk today that extends that further, not only to a behemah ba behemah, but even to a shilya in the behemah. So it would be mutter to eat those things, even though it's pretty disgusting, but people do eat it, believing that it's healthy and so on. And the question is, if some of it was expelled and you don't see any other fetus, do you have to assume that the fetus was expelled with it, or the head of the fetus was expelled with it, or what's left of the head of the fetus, which would mean that it was already born? And if it was already born, then it's no longer baba hima, and therefore it would be usher to eat. So this is the question. At what point do we have to worry about the various implications of a partially expelled amniotic sac? And therefore, so if you shecht an animal and you find a shilya in it, so whatever you find in it, there's no problem. And here the word shilya could refer to any of the elements that were associated with the birth, including the placenta or the amniotic sac. As again, as I say, nowadays the word shilya references only to the placenta, but that shouldn't bother you. It's not the way the Gemara is using it. Nowadays, the amniotic sac is called actually the sac of the shvir, the sac me shvir, but it's not the terminology of the Gemara. So nefesh hayafah tochlenu, you have to have a pretty strong stomach to eat this stuff. But, you know, if you got a very strong stomach, go for it, you know. Ve'ena mitam'a lo tumat tochlim ve'lo tumat nevelot. In the case of the animal over here, what we're talking about is a possibility of viewing it as foodstuff, but it's not going to be makabel tumas ochlin, unless, of course, you turn it into a foodstuff, because it's not a standard foodstuff. And anything that's not commonly eaten is not considered to be makabel tumas ochlin. And it is also not going to be metame tumas nevelis, even if the animal died without shechita, because it's not really part of the animal organism. And therefore, it's not part of what the Torah asserted as nevela. Once, however, once somebody made up his mind that he's going to eat it, and remember, things are able to be defined as kabbalas tuma through machshava. So once somebody decides, I'm going to eat this, at that point, it would be metame tumas oichlet. But it's never going to be metame tumat nevelot, because it's simply not part of the organism that the Torah asserted as a nevela. Now, what about, and here's where we start running into problems. What about if part of the amniotic sac was expelled? So now we've got a problem. And here you see the shilya is not at all in the terms of the Gemara, meaning placenta. Here it specifically means the sac, because the problem is that if the fetus is invisible, apparently it was reduced to microscopic liquid, so then how do we know that in the part of the sac that was expelled, how do we know that that part did not contain what was essentially the rove or the roche of the invisible fetus? And at that point, it would already be born. You're not allowed to eat. It's not kosher. You're only allowed to eat the amniotic sac because it was part of the shechita inside of the mother. And that we have a pasuk for, as we'll see in the Gemara. But once we have a chashash that it was yalud, then the entire thing is usher, even the part that's inside of the womb. And it's usher b'achila because it is a siman v'lad b'isha, v'siman v'lad b'behima. It is a definite sign. There's no possible way that you could have had a amniotic sac if there was never the formation of a fetus, both in humans and in any mammals. And because of that, we need to be choshesh that it was actually already born because of whatever part came out may have been the part that contained that rove or that roche of the fetus. Now, this also has implications legabe a bechor, because let's say this animal is a mevakeret. A mevakeret is an animal that is about to give birth to its first born. So this is a mevakeret, and what happened is that we don't find any fetus. All that happened in the birth is that she actually miscarried, but only Shilya, again, Shilya in this case could mean either, because we don't need the problem of the Miktsas Vlad in it, because here we're talking about a different question, which is the Kedusha of the elements that were associated with the Bechor. Now, in this case, we do not have to be Choshesh that there is a Bechor. And that's because if you consider the statistical possibility that this was a Bechor and therefore requires Kvura, like a Korban that died, well, you have to consider that statistically you've got approximately a 50% chance of a male or female in this animal birth. And plus, you have the additional statistical possibility of the cases that we had before of malformed animals that were actually, we talked about born with cloven hooves and other mutations. And those are called nidme. It might be nidme to another animal, to an animal that has different kind of feet. And the din is that a nidme is not kosher, is not a chal kedusha b'chor. So if you put the 50-50 chance together, the Gemara says, of male or female, together with the small statistical possibility of a mutation, you end up with 50.01% not b'chor. Right? And that is a rov. And that rov means you don't have to worry about it's being Kadosh B'Kedushas B'chorah. But suppose the animal that we're talking about is not a Mivakeret. Suppose it's a Korban Shlamim that is walking around waiting to be brought on the Mizbeach, and it miscarries. And of course, the Shlamim could be the Nekeva, so it miscarries. In that case, there's no difference if it's male or female. In which case, it's going to be Kadosh. And if it's Kadosh, then it has to be buried, like all things that are not usable of Kedusha. So even though, of course, it's possible that it was a mutation, but that's not a big enough percentage that's going to make any difference. Therefore, it should be buried. Now, here we run into another interesting corollary in which we talk about something that's not really part of Chulin, but we need to mention it here because of the minhag that people had. It was a superstition that if you buried an amniotic sac on the road, that then, not just anywhere on the road, but right at a major intersection, you know, so if you bury it on a major intersection, that was a superstition that will prevent further miscarriages of this animal. So that was about this. The state of affairs at the time. And therefore, you're not allowed to do that because you are not allowed to follow the superstitions of the Goyim, which are magical and don't have any attempt to relate to something that has a serious medical meaning. And so, because of that, you're not allowed to be covered at Parshas Drachim. You can't hang it up on a tree, which was also believed to be a way of curing the animal for the miscarriages. Can't do that either, because this is called Darkei HaEmori, and the Torah asks, Lo ta'aseh kema'aseihem. You're not allowed to go in the derech of the Amoraim that were there, in the Canaanites, in other words, that were there in Eretz Yisrael. And what it means, of course, is any type of Avodah Zarah, or of the Avodah Zarah superstitions are also because of Bechukotam, Lo te'lechu, and there's the question where the Rambam brings the Lo ta'aseh kema'aseihem, where it's Bechukotam Lo te'lechu. Okay, but that's not for us right now. This is a very major sugya. What is at what point is something considered to be? We've spoken about it a little bit before in Yuma and so on. At what point is something a superstition, and at what point is it a segula? And the Rambam went into great detail describing anecdotal evidence as being a segula, where you don't have any medical accounting for a particular phenomenon, because maybe you just don't know enough, but it definitely seems to be a phenomenon. So because of that, it's not usur, b'dei darkei ha'emori, even though emori do it. So it's no different than elephants knowing about a particular tree being useful for fertility because it has chemicals that are similar to hormones. Oh, okay. Well, if the elephants figure that out, it's not because they are brilliant scientists. It's because of anecdotal evidence. Well, humans can do that too. And then that's not us. But if it's just weird and there's no anecdotal evidence, it's just that people do this because they believe it, then it's just considered to be psychosomatic and it's based on magic and therefore it's us. That's basically the way it is. And the Rambam had some very some brilliant comments for his time about medical experiments, which he also threw in over there, where he says that the stuff that we consider to be actually medical evidence is 90% of the time garbage because you forgot to control for something. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. But anyway, yes. So this opens a completely different issue. Okay, so the Gemara wants to know, how do we know, Bichlal, that you have a right to eat something that is not the actual behema, ba-behema? I mean, this shilia, and here we're talking about both the placenta and the amniotic sac, is not part of the behema. So maybe it's not included in the behema, ba-behema. Well, the Torah Rabbanu, it says in the Torah, kol behema, tochelu. Now, the question is what we're talking about over here, what pasuk we're talking about. And it seems pretty clear that the pasuk that is brought over here is not really the correct pasuk, because the pasuk that we had darshaned earlier, remember, was that kol behemah, freset parsa, v'shosat shesah, shtei parasot, etc., ba behemah. That was the pasuk that we had used before to be matir eating. Because of the Shechita Se'im, to be matir eating the fetus, remember? So the Gemara, even though it's bringing this pasuk, it seems that this is not the correct pasuk, as the Gra explains, and that the correct pasuk that we're referring to over here is actually a very similar pasuk. This one is in Shmini, and instead of the pasuk that we had before in Re'eh, it reads like this. It doesn't start with the word v'chol behema, because that was a problem. That was v'chol behema ba behema. But over here, what we have is kol mafreset parsa ba behema ota tochelo, you see? So the Gemara then would be using that pasuk and would be quoting kol ba behema tochelo, which would mean even the shilia in the behemah, you're allowed to eat it if you shefted the mother. Now, this next piece is not meant to be taken serious, as we'll see. You might think that even if it was yatzta miktsasa, that you could eat it even if it came partially out of the womb. Talmud lomar, ota tochel. Ota velo shilyata, you can only eat the animal, you can't eat the shilya. So therefore, we have to understand that one is referring to when it's the shilya still in the womb, that when it was shechted, the other one is referring to a shilya that was yatzta miktsasa. Now the Gemara asks the obvious question. We don't really need that pasuk because, I mean, we understand on our own, based on the concept of ein shilya below vlad, which is a gabi klal. You can see those sparks flying right now. Ein shilya below vlad. There's no such thing as the formation of a shilya, either the placenta or the amniotic sac, without there having been a pregnancy. It's absolutely impossible. So if that's the case, then we need to understand on our own that if we don't see a fetus, then that means that that fetus was reduced to liquid. And how do we know that if part of the amniotic sac came out, how do we know that it didn't contain the head of what was once that fetus? So I don't need a pusik. It's obvious that I'm not allowed to eat that because it's already born. If it was already born, then the Shechita Se'im wasn't matir, and you're not allowed to eat a shilya that's just the outside. It's just a non-shechted organism. So I don't need a pusik. True, says the Gemara. Kra esmachta b'yama. You didn't really need the pusik. The pusik is there just as an esmachta and not for that purpose at all. But the main idea of it, of course, is the concept of behemah ba behemah. If it's talking about kol ba behemah, so the ota tochelo would come to be memayit, the cutting, like the Mishnah had, cutting the spleen or the kidneys and leaving it in, that would not be included. Okay, anyway, and it doesn't get Tumas Eichlin or Tumas Neves. So, boy, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nafra, we're talking about disgusting things that are considered to be Eichlin when you turn them into Eichlin. So, let's say that somebody boils up for a couple of days the skin, the hide, I should say, of a donkey. What's the din? Now, it becomes very, very soft. Does that mean that if he wants to eat it, that it would be considered to be a foodstuff? Well, my, you're talking about to be makabel tumas eichlin? Well, I mean, that's a beferish braita, as I'll tell you in a moment. Are you referring to tumat nevelot? That's also a beferish braita. So let me show you. First of all, if you're asking the question vis-a-vis the din of kabbalas tumas eichlin, because you turned it into an eichlin, so we have a braita, the tanya, or v'hashilya. This is the hide along with the shilyan. Either of those are not metame tumas eichlin, but if you boiled up the ore to a point that it became soft, or a shilya that you even just decided that you're going to eat, then it would be metame tumas eichlin. So there's your answer. It's a beferish braita that it would become shayach to eat. Now, as far as whether it turns into meat, and then it becomes, once you've softened it, it becomes the equivalent of basar of the nevela, and that was your question. That's also a braita. Tumat nevelot nami tanina. The Torah says, the hanogea benivlata yitma ada arev. So benivlata means dafka to the actual dead animal, not to its hide, not to its bones, not to its gidim, not to its horns, not to its hooves. And Rabbi Bar Barchana said, actually, that lo nitzrichon that the part, I mean, I don't need to know that because these are obviously, if they're just the way they are, they're not like the basar of the nevelah. The chiddush over here is that even if you turn this into tzike kedera, so tzike kedera is that soul food, you know, lots and lots of garbage stuff that you put together with all kinds of very spicy things, and then you pretend that it's edible, like hot dogs or stuff like that, right? That's total garbage. If you knew what it was, you'd vomit all the way to the bank. But since you don't know what it is, and it's covered with all types of nitrates and delicious types of desperately poisonous spices, so now that makes it delicious. So everybody's eating it. And that's the chiddush, says Rabbi Bar Barchana, that actually it's talking about where you turned it into tzike keder. What do they call that Negro food or the Louisiana food? That's tzike keder. I forgot there's a name for it, an American name.
Chitlin. Chitlin.
Chitlin? Okay.
Chitlins, chitlins,
Yeah.
chitlins.
Okay. Yes. Anyway, so that's what it's talking about. Tzike kedera. So you see over here that there's no din of nevelas, but there is a din of tumas eichlin. And I don't understand what Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nafka doesn't know. I mean, that these are well-known things.
Rebbe, I just want to heighten it. It was called Negro soul food because their masters discarded these parts and wouldn't eat it. So it's deliberately the parts that they collected and made chitlins, you know, and all these things from. It's homage to the.
Right. Right. Anyway, so what was Rav Nitzer's question? His question was a Kavitumas Eichlin, but you were not properly medayik. He asked about the Or of a Chamor. Why did he ask about the Or of a Chamor? Why didn't he ask about the Or of any animal? Because the Or of a Chamor is specifically nauseating. The shiny Or Chamor de Mois, people relate to donkeys and donkeys' hide as being particularly nauseating and smelly. And because of that, maybe a regular or of a cow, maybe you could soften enough, but the donkey, it's just going to still be nauseating to people. Okay, so then we said if the shilya was yadsta miktzata, it's a simen vlad b'isha, and it's a simen vlad b'behima. And because of that, you have to be choshesh that it was already born, and the part that came out is actually contained the head that had been liquefied. So Rabbi Elazar says, well, you only need to worry about that if there's no visible fetus. But, I mean, if there is a visible fetus, and we see that the fetus has not come out, you don't have to worry that maybe there was a twin that had liquefied and is actually a problem, because if it went out, so then it would be considered to be Yalud. That you don't have to worry about. You can assume that the fetus that you find is the fetus that belonged in that sack, and there wasn't anything else there. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it doesn't matter. Even if there is a fetus, if there's not a fetus, it doesn't matter, because how do you know there wasn't a twin? Maybe, and that's not so unusual, that when there is a twin, that actually one of the twins is going to put pressure the other twin to the point where it's actually reduced to just liquid. So maybe on the contrary, maybe there wasn't a twin there, and the invisible twin was actually delivered together with the part of the Shoya that went out, and the fetus that we see now, that is the other fetus. So Rabbi Yochanan is Machmir. Well, wait a minute, you're not saying this over right. Because according to this, Rabbi Yochanan is the one that's Machmir, and Rabbi Elazar is the one that's Mekel. And we know that Rabbi Yirmiyah said what the idea of Rabbi Elazar was a chumrah, not a kula. And if you're reading it as a kula, you're reading it wrong. Okay, so we must have got it backwards. So then, how do we read it properly? Ela I itmar och itmar. Omar Rabbi Elazar, lo shanu ela she'ena kshura b'la. When do we say that the shilia is considered to be usur because you're chayshish that it's containing the part that used to be the head of this uber, which is mashma, even if there is another fetus, that's only true where it's not connected to that fetus. But if it's connected to that fetus, kishura b'vlad, then it's too much to be chayshin v'lad acher. We don't have to worry about a twin. And it's clear that this is the shilia of that fetus. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says not so. And Rabbi Yochanan is the one who's machmer. And he is saying, anu, ein lanu, ela shilia, shilia below vlad, the only thing that was usher is when we can't attribute it to a particular fetus. If we see a fetus, then it doesn't matter. Don't believe Rabbi Elazar, who says it has to be kosher to the vlad in order for us to be convinced that it is the sack of this fetus. It doesn't make any difference. Ben kshurah b'vlad, ben ein kshurah b'vlad. We never have to be kosher for another vlad if we see that there is a fetus here. It doesn't. I mean, like, why would it have to be connected? And v'hainu d'amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, L'chumra, Amar Rabbi Elazar. This is exactly fits what it was that Rabbi Yirmiyah said. Here, it is Rabbi Yochanan that's being Mako, and Rabbi Elazar who's being Machmir. And in fact, there's a braita that actually says this chumra of Rabbi Elazar. Tanik avati de Rabbi Elazar. Here we're talking about a human, not an animal. And it was she was mapelet min be'machaya va'of, which according to the Rabbanan, are not mitame, a bit beleda, and shilya imahem. And there was also the shilya that came out with them. So if that shilya is connected to these mutations that look like birds or some type of animal, so then we don't have to be chershish that there was another human-shaped fetus with it. Ein chershim avlad acher. But if it's not connected, then you do have to be, which is exactly what Rabbi Elazar says. And since you have no idea whether that invisible fetus was a male or a female, you're going to have to be matil aleha chomer shnei vladot. She's going to have to keep both chumras. So she's going to have to be tmei'ah 14 days, because we have to be chashash that maybe it was a female. And therefore, her tumas leida was a 14-day tuma. And she's only going to have dam tohar after those 14 days up till the 40th day instead of the 80th day, because we have to be machmir as well that maybe it was a zachar. So she gets the worst of both worlds. Then why is that? She'ani omer, look, shemani muach shvir shel shulya. I don't know. Maybe the vlad, the shvir, that was together with that shulya, maybe it turned into liquid. And maybe the shilya of that shvir was actually the one that actually was born. Maybe that dissolved, and what I'm looking at is a shilya of a real vlad. So I have to be machmir in both directions. Okay, next thing we had in the mission. Hamivakeret shipila shilya. So we said you're allowed to throw that shilya, which seems to be the shilya of a mother that was about to have a bechor, and it would seem, you would think, to have kedushat bechorah, at least, I mean, it's a chance, 50-50. So since it's a suffix d'oraisa, you should have to be machmir. And yet the Mishnah says, no, you don't have to be machmir. You can actually throw it to the dogs. Why? My time up. Om Rav Yikabari the Ravami, well, consider. You've got basically the question of Rov Behemot, Yoldot Davar HaKadosh B'Bechor. Most animals that are giving birth are going to be giving birth to an organism that is shayach to be a Bechor, but there is a small percentage of animals that are going to miscarry mutations. And Nidme is not kosher B'Bechora, as we'll see in Bechoras. And therefore, you've got, let's say, a 1 out of 500 chance that it's a mutation. And in addition to that, you, even if you have something here that is a normal birth, so what would that be, not normal? It would be a nidme. So it doesn't look like it's actual, the organism that it was born to, okay? Similar to some other animal. But besides that, you've got the problem of generally a 50-50 distribution in the sex of the child. So, kol ha-yoldot, yoldot mechza zecharim, u-mechza nekevod. Now, if you put those two together, you put the 50% females, which are not kodesh b'bechora, together with the 0.01%, let's say, of these mutations, you end up being over the rove slightly towards the side that is not kodesh b'bechora. In which case, the zecharim that would be kodesh b'bechora now become a miut, and therefore you don't need to be machmir, and you can throw it to the dogs. But, continued the Mishnah, if you're talking about a korban shlamim, a female korban shlamim that miscarried, then, even though, obviously, there's still some chance, an elevated chance, by the way, remember, if it's a miscarriage, that it was a mutation, it should be tikaver. Then you'd have to be machmer. Why, my taima? Because it's clearly an overwhelming majority is not going to be a mutation. And because of that, it was bar migdash. It only needs to maintain kedusha, not kedusha sabachora, and this would be kodesh. But you can't bury it along a fork in the road, because that's superstition. So, inko rimota, and so on. So, abaya v'rovet amritavayu. Let's just make it clear. Kol davar sheyesh bo refuah. So, if you have things that seem to have medical potential, that we have at least a people reporting that this works, we haven't done real experiments on it, but nonetheless, what you're doing for purposes of medicine, not for purposes of magic. And supposedly we have anecdotal evidence that this has worked. So then it's not usur, even if it is being done by Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and they do it because they believe that the good Lord Scroogey Bopper is going to cure any animal whose shilya was buried, whatever, right? So that doesn't matter. I don't care if they are suspicious. I'm not doing it because of suspicion. I'm doing it because of the internet. And all these people are on TikTok claiming that it works. And maybe that's anecdotal evidence. Probably today that's just superstition. But it used to be. So, That
is by Weinberg said years ago, direct effect on it to affect the problem, not transference.
No, that's not the point here. That's actual refuah.
Ah, okay.
Right? If that's what you mean by direct effect, I don't know what you know.
That's the note that I have to the side of the page. And the other side I have...
It might mean that what you're doing, you believe, directly affects it, even though you don't know how. Maybe that's the point. But it's not some kind of, you do something and then something else happens. That's the point. Okay, so that's good. But if it doesn't have any refuah, even in terms of anecdotal evidence, then yesh ba mishum darkei re'amori, then you're also to do it. But wait a minute. We know that there's a braita, and it says beferish, that you do things that sound awfully magical to me. Like, let's say you've got an ilan shemashir perotav. So you've got a tree, and this tree always drops its fruits. So apparently, it matures the fruits prematurely, so it's a little bit overly excitable, this tree, and because of that, it never carries its fruits to term, so to speak. So what you're allowed to do is you can paint it with red paint, or sikra, so socropa sikra, or you can put rocks on its branches. Now, those things are done by the Amorim, and it should be the Amori, Darke Amori. So, I mean, I understand why you'd be allowed to put rocks on it, because the rocks actually will tire the tree out. You're going to be using energy for maintaining its branches, even though there are these heavy things on them, and that takes energy. So you're going to be actually making it a little bit less overexcited, you know? Does that make sense? Because it will be, it's going to make it weaker. But painting it with red paint? How in the world is that not just superstitious? Why is that mutter? And this reminds you, gentlemen, of what the world used to be like. It used to be that if you would paint the tree red and people would go by, they would say, oh my God, the poor tree is ill. That's a sign that the tree needs help. And anyone who walked by would pray for the tree. And therefore, yes, that's what the world used to be like, and not all that long ago. So that would be the reason that you do it. It's not superstition, it's notification. This tree needs refuah shlema. Please daven for tree, bas, so-and-so. Anyway, and everybody would, as a matter of course. So, people should see and should daven for the poor tree. So why would that be darkei ha'amori? You know, there's this beautiful story also from not all that long ago in which Dylan Thomas was, what's his name? Dylan, is it Thomas? What's his last name? The big famous singer.
There was a Dylan Thomas.
Yeah.
Dylan is the singer.
Yeah. Right.
So Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan. Is that what he's talking about? Yeah. Thank you. I knew it wasn't Dylan Thomas. Thank you. I rely on these extended brain cells, and they ain't working either, I'm telling you.
No doubt that Rebbe is familiar with the reference to the confusion between Dylan, Bob Dylan, and Dylan Thomas. It's an old Paul Simon song. No? I was sure that Rebbe would get that.
Rebbe knows it from Paul Simon.
Anyway.
Yeah. Rebbe knows it from Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Dylan Thomas, whoever he was.
Maisa Shaya, beautiful story. Maisa Shaya Kachaya, Bob Dylan was at his lawyer in Greenwich Village. He hated going to Greenwich Village because people would mob him and so on. So he would, you know, always try to go at a time that nobody would see him. He was at his lawyer's. He comes out of the office and he had a miserable time at the lawyer's. It didn't go his way. And he hears a Bob Dylan song being played really weird on a broken guitar that only had four strings. And because of that, it was coming across very strange, but he could tell that the person who was playing was trying very hard to get it right, was putting his heart into it. So he goes to see what's going on, and there's a kid sitting on the corner with a broken guitar that only has four strings, and he's playing that song like it's coming out of his heart. Okay, so he bends down and asks the kids, like, you know, what's the story? The kid doesn't look up, doesn't recognize him. And he says, you know, that, well, he can't go home. His mother is killing herself because his father died. And the only thing that he left him was this guitar. And he taught him this Bob Dylan song because he loves Bob Dylan. And he can't go home because he can't stand seeing his mother killing herself by drinking herself to death. So he's become, over the past month, he's become a homeless kid. And he just lives on the street. And this is all he's got in life. And there was $1.37 in the open, you know, box and thing. And nobody was putting any money in there. And he says, sometimes I get enough to eat, sometimes I don't, you know, whatever. So Bob Dylan takes off his glasses, his dark glasses, and looks at the kid. The kid looks up and he almost faints, you know. So this is his God, this is Bob Dylan. Anyway, so Bob, meanwhile, there's a crowd of people that started gathering around here. Some people recognized him. So he shouts out to the crowd, does anybody have a guitar? So one guy says, I've got a guitar. He runs home. He brings the guitar. Says, give that guitar to this kid. He gives the kid a guitar. And it gives him a whole mushmush about how he has to act. One of the people standing there was a social service person that dealt with homeless people, and their office wasn't so far away. And she volunteered to go talk to the mother and to maybe get, you know, give her therapy. And anyway, the bottom line is that he took out $500, gave it to the kid. This kid ended up making his own records by like 30 years later. I forgot his name. He was a pretty famous guy. Always was Machshev. Bob Dylan was the one who was Machshev my life, was Machshev my mother. This is passing by. You hear a mistake and something's wrong. I got to find out what's going on. An amazing story. So he died. Bob Dylan died it at the time. This is what music does for people. We all become chaverim and we all become lovers because we share the same music. And he tells this to the kid, everybody that shares that music is your friend. Amazing. Anyway, so that's what the world used to be like. Yeah, so Sokrob is Sikra.
1975, Michael Torres. It was 12.
Yes, correct. That's the boy's name. Yeah, so he became his own famous guy. How do you get that so fast, Barney?
Okay. I'm sorry, what was the name?
Torres, Michael Torres.
T-O-R-R-E-S.
Anyway, Kidatanya. Okay, so this is a Fersha Brisa. And we learned this out of the Mitzorah. Because what does the Torah say that the Mitzorah has to do? The Tamei Tamei Yikra. He's supposed to cry out that he's Tamei. Why is he supposed to cry out that he's Tamei? Tzorech lehodia l'rabim, v'rabim mevakshim alav rachamim. So that people should realize that he needs help. And this is true of anyone. V'chein mishi rabo davar, if something bad has happened to a person, he has to let people know. Not like today, in which everybody hides everything to make it like they are not vulnerable, you know. Me, never need help. So mishi rabo davar, tzorech lehodia l'rabim, v'rabim mevakshim alav rachamim. Amar avina keman talina kufsa b'dikla. There's a minhag today that if you've got a palm tree that loses its fruit, so they hang a cluster of dates from another tree. They hang it on it to show that it's not a healthy tree. Keman ki haitana. That way people will know that they have to daven for that tree. It's really unbelievable. They have to daven for that tree, and that way the tree will get well. Hadran alach behema mikasha. Uh-oh. I think we've got a sleeping...
No, I'm here. A blineda. Funkten? Funkten the helica parak.
Now,